Okay, very good, everyone. Welcome. this is it. Are you ready to become enlightened? Is that why you're here? Anyway, it's nice to have you all here. Is there, just maybe to ask, to start off with, is there many people here who are beginners in meditation practice? Quite a few beginners, okay. Who are beginners with Buddhism as well? Meditation and Buddhism, okay, good, okay. So anyway, welcome. It doesn't really matter whether you are beginners or super-duper advanced. Yeah, it's fine, whatever, because the basic teachings and the basic ways of practice are the same. It doesn't matter so much. You just have to kind of deepen the basic, you know, things that we do, deepen them more and more, until eventually you get the kind of the gradual results of the Buddhist practice and meditation practice. But before I start, I just wanted to mention a couple of things that I was told by Anusha that I'm supposed to say to everyone. Where's Anusha? Is she here? She's hiding here. Okay, there she is. Okay, good. I was told that this is going to be a noble silence retreat. Are you okay with that? What do you know what noble silence means? There's two meanings of noble silence. The first meaning is you don't talk, meaning number one. Second meaning is that your meditation is so deep that all thinking and all use of the mind stops. That's the second one. But to enable the second kind of noble silence, you start with the first one. If you don't talk outwardly, generally it tends to mean that you also become quiet inside. So there's a natural kind of causality there from one to the other one. So by being quiet with other people, we also end up being quiet inside, and the mind calms down and things kind of go much better as a consequence. It's only about a day and a half or a little bit more, so it's not that long. And I think you will enjoy the retreat much more if you keep to that noble silence rather than talking to people. So please try to keep that. Don't see it as a burden. See it as a... One way that I like to talk about noble silence is to think of it as, even if you find it a little bit difficult sometimes, see it also as an act of generosity to the people around you. You're giving them the gift of silence. And it's amazing, if someone really is a good meditator, what you will find is that they love to be silent. So it's a bit like giving a gift to somebody else if you do it the right way. So see if that works, and I would also recommend you to put away all your kind of devices and phones and iPads or whatever it is that you have, because it is really a big distraction for meditation practice, and to see how you go for this weekend. And the other thing is that I've been told there's going to be a little bit of filming. Is that right, Manvarada? Videoing? Yeah? Tiny little bit. Okay. So is everyone okay with that? It may mean that you may show up on the video somewhere. Is that okay? Yeah? Okay, good. I'm really glad you're okay with that. And then there is going to, in the evening, especially tomorrow evening, there will be a Q&A session. That probably means there will be a basket outside. Is that right, Anusha? Where are you? Over there. Okay, yeah. So the basket outside, there's a paper there and pens there. Okay, so you write down a question. You don't have to sign. They can be completely anonymous, which means you can say kind of really nasty things if you want to. Yes, anonymous. please don't do that. But just write. The point is that you are allowed to ask anything. There's no kind of, we don't censor things or anything like that. So please feel free to ask any kind of questions you want. That's kind of the point of this. And we can take those questions in the evening. And it's nice to have that opportunity to be open about things and, to ask anything you like, and I will do my best to answer things based on my practice as a Buddhist monk. I've been a Buddhist monk for 25 years, so it's quite a while. So we'll see what happens. And then there will also is also going to be interviews, Anusha. So if anyone wants to have an interview with me, to have anything about meditation practice, anything you want to talk about, do you sign up for those, or do you? Tomorrow morning, okay. So there will only be a few places, obviously, but I guess most people may not have much to talk about anyway, so that should be fine. Okay, so I'll talk a little bit about meditation practice, first of all, and then we can try it out, maybe for about half an hour or so afterwards. And to understand the idea of meditation, what it is all about, it is good to have a kind of general idea of what Buddhism is about, because meditation fits into Buddhism. It's just one aspect of a much broader outlook. And when you understand the broader outlook, you also understand what meditation is and how it works and how it functions in that context. And the Buddhist idea is really, it's an interesting thing. What actually is Buddhism? And this is something I have argued a lot with my fellow monks and lay people over time. People say, no, it's a religion. No, it's a philosophy. No, it's something else entirely. So what is it? At the end of the day, what it really comes down to is that Buddhism is a kind of psychology. It's a way of dealing with the mind, and build up positive qualities in the mind, how to experience more happiness in life, how to reduce your suffering, how to have more contentment and all of these positive things. That is really what Buddhism is about. Sometimes you may have heard, many of you probably heard about the Four Noble Truths. It starts off with suffering. Yeah, it's kind of the first one. And people say, oh, Buddhism is so pessimistic. Yeah, starting with suffering is the very first thing you hear. But actually, that is kind of misleading here. Because the whole purpose of the Buddhist path is actually to gradually emerge from the problems, the sufferings, the difficulties of life, and then move towards the opposite. Yeah, the peace, the contentment, the happiness, the joy, all those positive emotions. And that is really what the Buddhist path is about. So it's wonderful. Yeah, and I remember when I first started to understand what Buddhism was about, I thought, this is it. This is the meaning of life. What else am I going to do? Yeah, if this is all about finding happiness, and it kind of goes up and up and up, I'm not going to talk about the end point, but just the fact that it's moving towards that continuously, yeah, without stop, until it reaches some kind of goal far away, that is enough for me to understand that here I have found something which possibly could be the answer to the question of the meaning of life. Because that's what everyone wants, yeah? Everyone wants less suffering, more happiness, more joy in their life, better relationships with other people. This is part of it, yeah? It improves your relationships, it improves your ability to deal with difficult things and people and whatever. Why? Because you're building up all the good qualities inside. So this is really the Buddhist idea. And if you read about how the Buddha himself, and what is quite astonishing is that we still have many of the Buddha's original teachings, that go back 2,500 years, we still have those. And if you look at the Buddha, the way the Buddha describes his meditation path, yeah, the way it is experienced, if you like, the psychology of meditation, the first person experience of meditation practice, it is all about happiness. Yeah, you start off, this particular kind of sequence of causal connection starts off with the idea of morality, which includes kindness and all those kind of things. And then you have a sequence of various degrees of happiness, one upon another, until you kind of reach a degree of bliss you have never even thought was possible. Starting with, these are old Pali words, pamuja, which means like joy, piti, which means like rapture, more joy if you like, pasadi, which is tranquility, sukha, which is happiness, and then samadhi, which is deep meditation. Yeah, all of those words are about happiness, every single one of them. But more and more happiness as you go through this. And I remember reading about this. I remember reading about all the struggles that people have in meditation practice. And I understood that something often goes wrong with meditation. It should be something that we enjoy. Yeah. Life already has enough problems. We don't want to add more problems by coming to the meditation hall and actually making things worse. You want to lighten things up a little bit. This should be something that adds value to your life, not subtracts value. Otherwise, what's the point of the spiritual path? Yeah. So this really caught my eye when I first read this. I thought, this is just amazing, just astonishing. Yeah. And certainly, I want to commit my entire life to this, because this is the only thing that really makes any sense to me. I looked at my ordinary life before, I thought, this is pointless. What am I doing this for? And then I decided to become a monk eventually. So this is what it's about. And keep this at the back of your mind as you go through this retreat. Yeah, it's only 1.5 days or 1.75 days or whatever. Keep it at the back of your mind, because then you will be able to guide yourself nicely as to what to do and how to sit and how long and all of these kind of things. So this is a very kind of overview, bird's eye view of the path and of the meditation practice. So please use this wisely. In practice, this means that you can use the grounds, you can use the facilities of this place. You can go for walks in the beautiful bush around it, have a look at the animals, the kangaroos or whatever. It's quite a beautiful area around here. And the gardens here have also been specially kind of made for the center. You can go back to your room whenever you like. One of the great things about this meditation center, we have individual rooms. Very hard to get anywhere in the world. Yeah, this is kind of special super-duper meditation center. In Perth, probably, maybe the best meditation center anywhere in the world. Who would have thought that? You'd have no idea how lucky you were to kind of be born in this city when you got born here, but this is actually what happened. So use these amazing facilities. Go back and have a cup of tea if you want to. Yeah, it's available there. This is Ajahn Brahm's kind of ideas of compassion. Yeah, everything is there. Use the facilities well. And if you want to go back and lie down, sometimes when you come on a meditation retreat like this, you feel a bit tired. Yeah, because you come from a hectic life or whatever. You feel a bit tired? Okay, go back and lie down. When you come into the meditation hall and you sit in meditation, don't give up straight away, obviously. But if you find that you have sustained problems, you are just too restless, you have got too much pain, get up and do something else. Come back when you feel a bit better. Don't force yourself to do things that are unpleasant. Why? Because it goes against this entire principle of movement towards happiness, movement towards joy, contentment, freedom, and all of these kind of things. So very useful as a kind of background in your mind to kind of remind you whether you're heading in the right direction or not. In practice, to come, now I'm going to talk a little bit more about the nitty-gritty of meditation practice. One of the things that this means is spoken of by the Buddha as the middle path. And the middle path is like the middle way between indulgence on the one hand and tormenting the body on the other hand. So we can't really indulge too much here at Jhana Grove. Yeah, you can't talk to anyone, you don't have much entertainment, so indulgence isn't going to be the problem. Rather, be careful with the other side of tormenting yourself too much. There seems to be this deep-seated idea in human beings that if you torment yourself, you're going to make progress on the path. Is that right? It's interesting. Yeah, if you look at the various religions of the world, you look at kind of some of the Christians in world history, you look at the Hinduism, you look at even at Buddhism. Buddhism actually teaches the middle path. You shouldn't be doing this. But lo and behold, you find exactly that in Buddhism. People tormenting themselves. They're sitting for hours and hours. Oh, it's excruciating. I can't deal. I'll sit longer. Yeah, be mindful of your pain. Okay, whatever. And then they go on for like that and never come back again ever afterwards on any meditation retreat. That's actually quite common. They say that there are certain meditation systems taught in Buddhism where 90% of people don't come back, yeah, because it's just too excruciating. Yeah. And that is where you know they have strayed from the middle path. This is the first teaching of the Buddha and the first thing that people forget. Maybe there's a connection there, first teaching and first thing they forget. I'm not sure. Maybe there's a connection. Anyway, so this is a serious problem. So what that means in practice, to avoid that self-torment, make sure that you are as comfortable as you can when you start out. Many people these days are not used to sitting on the floor, so if you find sitting on the floor comfortable, please do so. But if you don't think that you have to keep up with the Joneses. Is anyone called Jones here? No, okay. But anyway, yeah, don't have to keep up with anyone. So just remember that. This is not you against someone else. You don't have to prove anything. Yeah, if you want to sit on a chair, please do so. This is about you developing your mind, not about having to prove anything to anyone. So sit comfortably here. If you find that during your meditation you feel uncomfortable, and by uncomfortable I mean you don't move straight away, but if the discomfort persists and your mind goes back to the discomfort, can't really let go of it, then you change your posture. Yeah, move your legs a little bit, sit differently, add an extra cushion. I'm trying to lead by example. That's why I took this other cushion over there, so I can use an extra cushion. I'm going to lead by example straight away. This is what a good teacher is supposed to do, lead by example. So that's what I'm doing here. Is that okay? Yeah. So this is so important, because when you get that right, actually meditation becomes far more pleasant straight away. Don't torment yourself. Don't make life too difficult. So sit comfortably, change your posture if you have to. Don't make too much noise. Yeah, do it in a kind of quiet way. But if you do it in a quiet way, it's not really going to disturb anyone very much. If you need to get up altogether, you want to go out and go for a walk, maybe you want to do some walking meditation, or you want to do whatever, please also, that is okay. Please feel free to do so. And what happens when we do this, with the kind of the whole point of this, is that meditation practice is a training of the mind. Yeah, it's not a training of the body or anything like that. So to train the mind, what we have to do is you have to give up attention on the body. And the only way you're going to be able to give up attention on the body is not to indulge the body. Yeah, if you kind of listen to nice music or you see nice things or you feel nice things or whatever it is, if the senses are always going out into the world because you're enjoying that, so as long as you indulge the body and the five senses, the mind will go out into the world. You won't be able to keep it inside. That is one problem. The other problem is that if you torment the body, there's going to be a problem. There's a problem there. And as long as there's a problem in the body, the mind wants to resolve that. And either way, this is why these two extremes don't work. Because either way, the mind is preoccupied with the body rather than being able to withdraw from the body and go inside instead. This is the logic behind the middle way, the idea of withdrawing from that body and then being able to focus on the mind. So this is the very first point, and this is kind of very important, so please make sure you remember that, yeah? And I guarantee you, if you remember even that little point, you know more than 90% of 90% of Buddhist meditators, yeah? So it's quite easy to know more than most Buddhist meditators. It's a very simple and thing to follow. And one of the many reasons why this is so important also is because Buddhist practice is something you have to do over long periods of time. Yeah, one meditation session of one retreat is fine. But if you want real results on the Buddhist path or in the spiritual practice or whatever you want to call it, you have to come back to it. Yeah, maybe do a little bit in your daily life, maybe come back on retreats once a year or twice a year or whatever it is. And when you keep on doing this for long term, that is when it gets results. And to be able to do that, you have to be able to enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, you're not going to come back. It's really as simple as that. This is the first point. The second point is to keep meditation very simple. Yeah, it is not something that you really do. You don't have to kind of sit down, I'm going to do meditation practice. If you do too much, you're going to become tense, you're going to become uncomfortable, you're not going to really be able to relax, you're not going to be able to enjoy what you're doing. Meditation isn't done. Meditation is something that happens when you have the right attitude and you do things in the right way. So you don't need to do anything. So how then does it work? The way it works is that basically you sit back and you, first of all, you focus on the body, relax the body, make sure you have no tensions, that you are comfortable mentally and physically, yeah, by relaxing everything, by letting go of the past, letting go of your work and family and all the duties of the world, leave those behind. And as you stay here over a couple of days, you will see your ordinary life kind of fading into the background. And that's really nice when that happens. Yeah, that's when peace starts to become possible here at Jhana Grove. So allow those things to fade into the background. And the way to do that is really by doing nothing much at all, but sitting down, enjoying what you have here, enjoying the nice atmosphere, enjoying the peace and the quiet and the good company and all of these kind of things. And as you do that, things will start to become peaceful all by themselves. So a very large part, a very big trick of meditation practice is the ability just to be patient, just to sit back, just to wait and allow things to happen. One of those astonishing things that I remember seeing in the word of the Buddha, the suttas. Suttas are like the discourses of the Buddha, which I thought was very powerful and it fits in very well with the teaching of Ajahn Brahma. Is anyone here who hasn't heard about Ajahn Brahma? You haven't heard about Ajahn Brahma? Okay. You have? Okay, good. One over there. You haven't heard of Ajahn Brahma? Okay, good. So in that case, I can say it. I can say this. Because this Ajahn Brahma is like the boss of the monastery. Yeah? So we are all his minions. We're all kind of his slaves. And he's the kind of the big master of the monastery here. So what was interesting when I was reading the suttas, the word of the Buddha, was that the Buddha says in this particular sutta on meditation practice, he says that when you move from one stage to the next one, you don't do that by an act of will. Yeah, the Pali is an ancient Indian language. The Pali says, na chetanaya karaniya. I say this because it sounds impressive, yeah? So it gives you more authority as a teacher when you sound really impressive. So I say, that's why I kind of add lots of kind of Pali words in there. So Pali is this ancient Indian language which basically goes back to the time of the Buddha. And all the discourses of the Buddha, they still actually exist in that language. So the Buddha says, quite literally, to move forward in meditation, to go from one stage to the next one, it cannot be done by an act of will. Yeah, it's very interesting. Yeah. And yet the vast majority of meditators, if you ask them how meditation works, they say, well, you sit down, you close your eyes, and you watch the breath. Yeah, but how can you watch the breath? Well, the way most people watch the breath is by an act of will. Yeah, you force your mind onto the breath, you grasp onto the breath. And of course, if you grasp onto the breath like that mentally, it doesn't take long before you start to feel tense and you can't really relax properly because you're holding onto the breath for dear life. So don't worry about the breath. Yeah, what you will find is that when you sit down and you start relaxing, the breath may be there or it may not be there. It doesn't really matter. The point is you don't really focus on it on purpose. You kind of leave it in the background, or if it isn't there, you forget about it altogether. And then you just wait in the present moment. You allow yourself to relax. You allow yourself to enjoy what is here. It is a bit like, you can imagine, if you come home after a long day of work and all kind of duties that you have, sometimes you feel exhausted. And all you want to do is just sit down in a nice chair and just kind of, you know, not do anything, yeah? I assume everyone here knows that feeling, yeah? And what do you do at that point? Don't do anything. That's the whole point of it, yeah? When you sit back in a chair, you don't start thinking, oh, yeah, I must watch my breath, anything like that. That's the last thing that you think, because even watching the breath is painful. All you want to do is relax. And meditation is a bit like that. Yeah, you relax almost as if you're sitting in your favorite chair. You come back home after a day's work and you just allow everything to be. You allow everything to flow. You go with the flow of things rather than trying to control anything. This is kind of the idea. So imagine, in a sense, that you're just sitting here, yeah, in your favorite chair. You're allowing your mind to flow. You're not trying to control it. You allow all of these things to flow through you. And if you're able to allow this fully without interfering, the magic thing that happens is that things start to calm down all by themselves. And one of the reasons why that is the case is because all of these thoughts, all of the things going through our minds, the reason they are there is because they have been produced by the willpower in the first place. That's why we think about these things. We're pushing ourselves in daily life and all these kind of things. By not using willpower, by allowing things to flow in this way, actually withdrawing that willpower, things start to calm down. It's like magic. And all you have to do is sit back, relax, and enjoy. And as you do that, when things start to calm down, this thing starts to arise, which is called mindfulness. Yeah, mindfulness is now becoming this catchphrase or catchword that you hear everywhere. Everyone is using mindfulness. Everyone is going to mindfulness course and these kind of things. But this is where it comes from. It comes from the teachings of the Buddha. That's where it was derived from. Then it was kind of put into the world and used in a secular way, withdrawn from the Buddhist teachings. But this is how it arises. By allowing yourself to relax, to be at ease, to allow the world to die down all by itself, gradually you gain clarity. Gradually you're able to be in the present moment. Being in the present moment just means that you're not thinking about the past, not thinking about the future, and you're also physically present. Yeah, you're in this space, not some kind of other fantasy land or anything like that. That's really all that mindfulness means, the ability to be in the here and now, physically and also time-wise and also spatially, if you like. So this mindfulness happens all by itself, and this is so nice when it happens by itself, because the alternative is to bring it into existence by force again, by willpower. And if you try to bring mindfulness into existence by force, every time you use force and willpower, you start to feel tense. Yeah, I'm sure you will know this from your work, yeah, or whatever else that you do in your life. If you have to do a task and you don't really enjoy it, perhaps, I'm sure maybe many of you enjoy your work, but sometimes work might be boring and you have to force your mind onto something, concentrating on your task. After a long day, you feel tired. Yeah, you feel tired because you have to use that force to be able to do, write the report or read something or whatever it is. So this is the opposite of that. When we in Buddhism talk about, sometimes you hear the word concentration being used, but actually it's a very bad word because concentration implies very often the use of willpower. Here is almost the opposite. Yeah, it is the opposite. You actually withdraw that willpower. You don't force yourself to be in the present moment. You allow the present moment to come into existence by just relaxing. And then suddenly you find yourself being more aware. If it's done in the right way, it's very beautiful. It's very relaxing. And it feels really good. Yeah, it feels kind of natural and good. And there's no problems with it whatsoever. So mindfulness arises. You start to be in the present moment. So what happens then? One of the things that is kind of useful to remember, which I always like to tell people, is that it is useful to have some strategies to help you remain in the present moment. Because very often what happens, you kind of gradually mindfulness arises and you find that you're kind of, I don't want to use the word karma, but your habits from the past, they catch up with you. Yeah, you're thinking about your work, you're thinking about your life, you're thinking about all of these kind of things. So during this retreat, that's what's going to happen. Yeah, sometimes you find yourself thinking about all kind of stuff. So how do we avoid that? And one of the great ways of avoiding that is to remember to prioritize your spiritual life. Yeah, you find yourself kind of thinking about, problems in your ordinary life or whatever. Remember to prioritize the spiritual life. Whatever you prioritize is where your mind is going to likely to hang out. Yeah, your mind, if you prioritize the worldly life, if you prioritize your family or your work or whatever, even while you're here on retreat, then you're going to be thinking about those things. If you prioritize your spiritual life, it is much easier to remain in the present moment because it is your priority. So the reason I'm saying this is because if you look at the vast majority of the mindfulness movement around the world, the way they advertise that is by saying, well, if you follow this mindfulness course, you're going to be better at your work. You're going to be a better parent. You're going to be a better partner. You're going to be a better friend. You're going to function better in the world. Yeah. So because of that, you should do mindfulness so that these other goals are fulfilled. In other words, the priority is the worldly things, and the spiritual is like a subsidiary thing which is there to support all your worldly goals. And it kind of sounds nice, yeah, because we all kind of want many aspects of our life to work out. But there is a problem with that. And the problem with that is that at the top of the hierarchy is all the worldly goals. And because they are at the top, because they are ultimately what you prioritize, you're going to think about them. Because this is what is most important to you. And that's problematic. It's very problematic because it means that in your meditation practice, because they are a kind of final thing which matters to you, you're going to think about it. Yeah, you're going to think about, what's happening to, I have these problems at work, or I have this person who is really difficult, or, I have these things that I need to solve. Your mind is going to go back to resolve those things. And it is especially tempting to do that in your meditation practice, because as you meditate, you feel peaceful and calm, you feel the power of the mind building up, and you really want to think about this thing, because you think, now I've got the power to do it, yeah? And that is where the priorities, prioritizing the right thing becomes so important. So take it the other way around. Remember that the real priority in life is actually the spiritual path. This is what matters. It matters also in your personal life. If you go to work or in your family life, what is it that makes family life meaningful? It is how we treat each other. Yeah, it is how we are towards each other, whether we are kind to each other, have compassion for each other. That is what makes family life useful or nice or something purposeful. That is how it is for me. I think about my family members. The only way I really want to be with them is to be kind and friendly and have a good time and maybe talk some Buddhism, of course. That's obviously an important part of it. Then you are heading on the right track. If you think about life in the right way, you will realize that everything we do only has meaning insofar as we imbue it with spiritual qualities. The same thing is true for work. I mean, what kind of work, if you only work for money and for advancement in your workplace or for status or whatever, it's pointless. Yeah, it becomes painful after a while. We start competing with each other. We start doing all of these things that are really unpleasant. So instead, we think, well, what is the bigger picture? Well, if I'm going to work, yeah, this is kind of, my work is being a monk. Yeah, is that work? Okay, whatever. So if you're going to work, yeah, whatever it is meaningful. That too, insofar as how is your work environment? How do you treat your fellow workers? How do you treat your customers? How do you treat all the stakeholders in that job that you have? That is what gives that meaning too. It is completely pointless and empty if you only work for money and you only work for whatever else, unless you also have those components. So what makes life meaningful in all circumstances, I say, are spiritual qualities. And that is why these things should always be the final thing which matters in life. This should be priority number one. And if you think like this while you're here on retreat, and then when you after the retreat you go back again, you bring some of those qualities back with you in your ordinary life, then your ordinary life gets better. You come back next year on this retreat. Is that right? Yeah, just testing. But actually, maybe you shouldn't make a promise yet. Let's see how the treat goes, and you can decide at the very end. But you come back next year, maybe, maybe not. See, maybe you hate it, who knows, but maybe you love it. So some will come back, some won't. That's always the way it goes. And then you're building up. Yeah, your ordinary life builds up your meditation life. Your meditation retreats build up your ordinary life, and it goes hand in hand like that. You prioritize your spiritual life in all spheres of your life, and then this thing really starts to work wonderfully here. So I'm kind of running out of time, I think. So anyway, I've probably said plenty enough already. I'm going to talk more about meditation practice tomorrow afternoon, and tomorrow morning I'm going to talk more about general ideas. So this will all be largely about meditation practice and about Buddhist or spiritual values and ideas in general. So that's what's going to come up over the next couple of days. But now I would suggest that we try a little bit of meditation in practice. It won't be too long, only about half an hour or so, and then you can carry on as you like after that. Okay, so first of all, find a nice and comfortable posture for yourself, and we'll get started here. Okay, everyone, so just as I mentioned, just start off by closing your eyes. And one of the nice things about closing your eyes is that so much of the world is shut out. So much of the sensory input comes through the eyes. And it's astonishing how much better you feel your body once the eyes are closed. So close your eyes and spend a little bit of time just by feeling your body, making sure you are really at ease. We're going to be doing meditation for maybe half an hour or so. And so make sure you are ready for about half an hour of sitting in one posture. And please just spend quite a bit of time at the beginning, just continuing to feel your body, and to make sure that, first of all, you are comfortable, but also that you are relaxed and you are at ease. And sometimes you can use just very simple tricks like taking a few deep breaths and by expanding kind of the muscles in your body, you can relax quite a bit. But the most important thing is just to be patient, enjoying the peace and the tranquility, and just allow things to calm down. And please just stay with the body for now and make sure that you are really nice and relaxed. And if you find that there is a lot of thinking going on or you feel tired or whatever it is, there is nothing really that is right or wrong in this area. The point now is to allow things to be, not to try to push things one way or the other, but just allow things to flow. Don't think that there is a right way or a wrong way, because once you start judging, you start doing. When there's no judgment, there's nothing to be done. And if you like, you can just think of yourself as resting here. There's nothing to be done, nothing to be gained. All you're doing is resting and allowing yourself to gain back the energy again here. And to do that, all you have to do is just to be with the flow of things. As if you're coming home from work after a long day and you're tired and you just sit down and you allow your mind to flow. In a similar way, you do that now. And then let's see, gradually allow clarity to re-emerge. And if you can, just keep on observing the flow of things. Remember, there is no right or wrong at this point in the meditation practice. There's only you observing what is happening here. And again, by not judging anything here, there's nothing to be done, nothing to be sorted out. And as you do that, you will notice that sometimes you feel the beautiful sense of peace that is available right here. And if you see the peace, make note of the delightful quality of that peace. And the more you note the delight of the peace, the more your mind will be attracted towards it. And if you can, just continue to rest in this way by not doing anything here, and just allowing things to be here. And you will gradually feel that by not doing anything here, actually your energy starts to return. The mind becomes more powerful. And this is what eventually enables mindfulness to arise. So keep on doing this if you're able, and allow things just to be without doing anything here. It is contrary to how we ordinarily live. And that is why it sometimes takes time to get used to the idea of just resting and being with whatever is available. Okay, so we are coming close now to the end of the meditation. And before we come to the very end, I would like to ask you just to review what has happened over the last half an hour or so, and to ask yourself if you now feel more at ease, more relaxed, more peaceful, what has happened over the last half an hour. And if you do feel more at ease, more relaxed, whatever, ask yourself why that is the case. And by reflecting on your meditation in this way, you gradually start to learn about how it works, and then you start to become able to look after your own meditation practice. I was going to ring the bell. There's no bell here, so that's the end of the meditation. Okay, everyone, that's it for tonight. So please have a nice rest, have a good night's rest, and then we'll see you again tomorrow morning. Yeah.